This is the Week in Review, where we will get analysis and commentary on top state, national, and international political news stories of the week from two guests from different political perspectives. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 11th. We have many issues to cover, so we won't be spending a great deal of time on any one of them. So if you want to talk about, say, the repeal of the four-hour training requirement to get a concealed weapons permit in Wisconsin, or how about the vote in Ohio this week that is energizing the recall Governor Scott Walker groups, or the Penn State scandal, or the allegations plaguing Herman Cain, or Rick Perry's forgetful gaffe, or any issue that you would like our guests to discuss, you better call in now, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let me welcome our guests. Louis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
And also joining us from our Wausau studios, Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau, member of the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. I mentioned that Walter John Chilson, a former Republican state senator, Louis Fortas, you're a former Democratic state legislator, isn't that right?
Yes, and good morning, Walter John. How are you?
I'm fine, Lou. Good to talk to you.
Did you two serve together?
For a short time.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's so much to talk about. Let's start with Ohio and the repeal or the rejection of the collective bargaining law that stripped public employees of their collective bargaining rights in Ohio. Voters said, we don't want this. And that's energizing groups in Wisconsin. Your reaction first, Louis Fortas?
Well, I think that the people who are promoting the recall of Scott Walker can't be other than elated by what they saw in Ohio. First of all, the Ohio proposal was simply to eliminate a particular law that was passed. It wasn't a complete recall because that's the way the rules are set up in Ohio. But so that was much more narrowly focused, and they still garnered 61% of the vote. So when you have someone like Governor Walker who has there's probably well over 100 issues that people are really upset over. I don't see much problem with them gaining the signatures to take on Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm. Do Scott Walker recall groups have reason to be enthusiastic, Walter John Chilson?
Well, I think there's no question that that is the initial benefit. If there's a benefit to any group, it certainly is a benefit to those that are gathering signatures. I think it remains to be seen whether that'll have any effect on the outcome of the recall vote. Actually, that'll come next year.
Yeah, mixed signals from Tuesday's elections, though. Louis Fortas, not everything, I guess, was pro-democratic, so to speak. The same Ohio voters said no to President Obama's health care reform and the individual mandate.
My understanding is there was some confusion on the way that thing was written. But yes, you're right. And also in Virginia, the Republicans had some gains. But by and large, I think, in Iowa and other states, in New Jersey, I just think that it's a reaction to what has occurred in the last, over the past year with some of these very, very extreme Republicans that came into office, whether it's Indiana, Ohio, Florida, Wisconsin, New Jersey. There's been some real overreaching on their part, and I think people are saying, "Whoa, wait a second, that isn't the state that we want to be living in, and this is not the way we want to see things going on." And so, yeah, I think there was a pretty clear message that a lot of voters were really upset over how extreme things got in a number of places.
Do you see the pendulum swinging back toward Democrats for 2012, Walter John Chilson, based on what we saw on Tuesday?
Oh, perhaps somewhat swinging back, but that is the way of politics in this nation, is that the pendulum does swing, and I think the euphoria that the Republicans had after the elections in, 2008, that is going away somewhat. They're stumbling somewhat now in trying to take benefit of the results of that election.
Let me ask go ahead.
It's the 2010 election I meant to talk about. I think the elections nationwide showed an awful lot of evidence of voters favoring the status quo. As we mentioned in Ohio, they did turn off the collective bargaining law, but then they also gave quite a blow to President Obama. I think a more serious one to President Obama as he looks ahead to a possible tough fight for a reelection. And Democrats retained a firm control in New Jersey, despite the popularity of the Governor Christie there. And I think in Virginia, Republicans failed to wrest from the Democrats outright control of the Senate, but they were poised to gain a 20th seat, and that would pull absolutely even with the Democrats, and then the tie-breaking vote would go to the presiding officer, who was a Republican. So that was a big gain in Virginia, certainly a blow for President Obama.
There was also a referendum in Mississippi. Mississippi voters rejected this personhood amendment that would have defined life as starting at conception. A Wisconsin lawmaker is saying that he's going to be introducing a similar constitutional amendment here in Wisconsin. Louis Fortas, your thoughts on the defeat of that personhood amendment in Mississippi and whether it stands a better fate in Wisconsin?
I think that's a real clear example of this overreach. I mean, that's ridiculous, that law. And I think that I'm not surprised that it's being introduced in Wisconsin, because there are some very, very, very extremely right-wing fanatical Republicans in the legislature right now. When Walter John was there, Walter John, they wouldn't let you in this part in the Republican Party anymore.
I think they certainly would call me a rhino, Republican in name only.
Wow. Well, what's your reaction, Walter John, to Mississippi voters saying no, we are not going to try to ban abortion, or this would have possibly banned certain forms of birth control and in vitro fertilization?
I'm opposed to abortion, as is the governor of Mississippi. And the governor of Mississippi had trouble. He didn't favor it. He said he was going to vote for it because he is so strongly anti-abortion. But there were a lot of people that were disenchanted with that proposal. Even the Catholic Church said it wasn't a good idea. So I'm not at all surprised. I think it was a too radical effort to define personhood. That's a logical thing to be done, because the U.S. Supreme Court said, even in their decision in the Roe versus Wade, said that if there was a definition of personhood that included a fetus, then they would not have been able to rule the way they did. So that's what's why the effort's going on right now.
Yeah. Just a quick reaction, Louis Fortas, to Democrat Jill Billings winning a Wisconsin Assembly seat on Tuesday. This was the only election in Wisconsin. She wins in the 95th. It's a special election because Jennifer Schilling was elected to the state Senate in one of the recall elections.
Okay, there was absolutely no surprise that she won. I mean, that is a Democratic seat. If she didn't win, that would have been big headline news. But the thing that is surprising is the margin that she won by. She got over 70% of the vote, and that's pretty that's pretty overwhelming.
Well, on Tuesday, there is going to be the official kickoff of the recall Scott Walker campaigns, November the 15th. There's also going to be a recall the recall rally. So an opposing group that doesn't want the governor recalled is also going to be rallying. Just your general thoughts, Walter John Chilson, on what we're headed for here.
And give me that again.
Your thoughts on what the next
the recall, 60
days are going to be like in the state of Wisconsin.
I think there's no question that they will be able to get the votes that the propelled by the Ohio vote that will give them a lot of enthusiasm. I think there will be a recall election. I'm already getting letters soliciting funds for Governor Walker's recall campaign. So I, if you're asking is it going to be successful, the recall petition will be successful. But I'm really upset with these recall elections. There's tremendous amounts of money that have been spent. What was it, $45 to $50 million in the last legislative recalls? It may be twice that much in the Governor Walker recall on both sides. And an insane amounts of money coming in from outside, again, on both sides of the issue, coming from outside Wisconsin. And that is a big trouble because I think the kinds of money that's being poured into these campaigns is really destroying representative democracy. It's that bad. It's that dirty. We don't, not only is it a awful huge amounts of money being wasted, I think, but it... we don't know where the money's coming from, and that's another big problem. We should at least do what they do in Ohio and try to have a system that has funding, campaign funding from the state coffers rather than bringing in all its outside money. I think not only do I think it's a waste of money, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could raise that kind of money for poor people who need it? I'm involved with a place called the Neighbor's Place here in Wausau, and we're continually trying to raise money to feed people and give them help them pay rent and things like that. But if we could raise $500,000 or $1 million in Wausau for something like that, that'd be wonderful. But they instead see opportunities to waste it on these ridiculous recalls.
Yeah. So the recalls or the recall effort will be a waste of money, Louis Fortas.
Well, first of all, I agree with everything that Walter John said, and I'll even go further and to say, that money coming in is really dirty money. I mean, that is money coming in from people like the Koch brothers and the like. And they have a extreme right-wing agenda. And you have a lot of these legislators that just, you know, they're coming in, they're kind of weak in the sense of, I mean, they don't have strong policy ideas. They're basically getting fed by these right-wing groups like this ALEC, this American Leadership Exchange Council, and they get invited to the conferences, and they get wined and dined, and they feed them these ultra-right-wing public policy ideas and or issues, and they come running back to the state, and they introduce them. And in this current environment where the, again, very extreme people are running both houses of the legislature, these things are getting passed. And that is just changing the whole nature of Wisconsin. And again, I'm a progressive Democrat. Walter John is a Republican. And when you listen to Walter John, I mean, we're not far apart in terms of we want to see fair debate and rational debate on issues of importance to Wisconsin, not the agendas of extremists from out of state who are basically buying their way in. That's just disgusting.
We're talking with Louis Fortas, who is a former Democratic state legislator, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau, about the news of the week. This is the Week in Review, and we will get to your calls in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lots of other state and national issues that we'll be talking about, including news involving GOP presidential candidates Herman Cain and Rick Perry. Also news about how schools, public schools, are dealing with education cuts in Wisconsin, new Badger Care cuts, new training requirements for concealed carry, or I should say the state has dropped a four-hour training requirement for concealed carry. So lots to talk about. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Walter John Chilson and Louis Fortas during this edition of the Week in Review. And we have lots of callers who want to bring up a variety of different issues. I think that I wanted to talk about this new survey that's out on how schools are handling the education cuts, and that made big news yesterday. Jim in Watertown wants to bring that up. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I just have one comment prior to that, though, and that is that Mr. Chilton made a comment regarding representative government and how these recalls are ridiculous, and I would agree with both callers that, or both of your guests that way, but I think Governor Walker brought this on himself by ignoring representative government based on the percentages of his win in Wisconsin, and the Senate the Republicans totally refusing to make any kind of compromise regarding the restriction or the elimination of collective bargaining. That being said, I'd like to hear from both of your guests regarding one of the things. Walker said that the cuts on education and the benefits of getting rid of collective bargaining would free up schools to do amazing things, I guess, is how I read it. And we're finding out that 83% of superintendents in the state met, and we're finding that schools are having a very difficult time. Many laid off teachers. Many teachers retired, and I will guarantee you they thought it was almost a forcible retirement because they couldn't see any real positives down the road. And with that, I think that we have a situation where schools are deep trouble also because many of them have received a one-time, one-year federal stipend, so to speak, and some of these administrators are saying next year is going to be absolutely horrendous, and I'd like to hear what they have to say.
Thank you very much, Jim, for bringing up the issue. Schools are hurting a lot. Louis Fortas, what is your take on this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that you don't make the severe cuts that were made and then basically force public employees to pick up a part of the cost, but the other part just comes in lower quality education. And by that, I mean, class sizes go up. And one of the most basic, I mean, all of the research almost unanimously will say, if you want to improve schools, lower the pupil-teacher ratio. It's interesting that the Republicans and the right-wingers will always say, well, you can't, throwing money at a problem doesn't solve it. Well, those same folks, when they send their kids to these private prep schools, if you look at the amount of money going behind each child, it's, two and three times what public school students are getting. And that's okay when it's their children. But when it's, our children, then, who cares? They can just sit in a larger classroom and they can have more distractions than that and get less individual attention. No, I was a teacher and it's pretty clear, I mean, whether you were a teacher or not, that when you have cuts like this, children are going to suffer and they are our future.
Yeah, and Walter John Chilson, this survey done by school administrators, a majority of the state school districts say that they were forced to make staff reductions and increase class sizes as a result of school aid cuts in Governor Scott Walker's budget. The governor's office, though, countered that his reforms are working, and says a majority of the teacher layoffs were in districts that didn't adopt his reforms, notably Milwaukee, Kenosha, and Janesville. Your reaction to this?
Seen that report yet, but to respond to one thing that Lou said, that private schools are much better funded. I certainly have not found that to be the case in putting my kids through a private school education. The teachers work for less, and they are the per pupil cost is much lower than it is in the public schools. Also, the recent there is some truth to the fact that throwing money at the problem isn't the only solution. We spend more than any nation per capita on children in education, and yet we're rated about 52nd or 56th, something like that, in the results that we get for that money, how well educated our children are. I think there are some reasons for that, but that's a shocking, I think, indictment of our present education in this nation. I think lots of evidence that Governor Walker's program is working and providing relief for taxpayers. You read continually that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even over $1 million has been saved on one item alone that I wasn't even aware of, and that is that the schools are not being forced, it appears that they were forced anyway, to go with the teachers' health programs. I didn't even know they had a separate program that they were taking care of themselves, but they forced this on the schools. Now they're not forced to do that, and they're saving really substantial dollars because they are going with other private health insurers and saving a lot of money for the taxpayers.
We need to move on to go ahead, very briefly,
Lewis. Can I get to respond? First of all, I was talking about prep schools. Now, I assume you sent your children to some kind of parochial schools, and that's a very different ballgame than what the real wealthy people are sending their children to. And other thing is this idea of the teachers having their own healthcare system and the like. That's all bargained. That was all bargained when you had collective bargaining. And they traded off salary. If you compare teacher salaries in the United States to those in the UK or to Germany, our teachers are grossly underpaid relative to those countries. And so this stuff is all bargained away. They bargained less wages and better health insurance and that. So now they're coming in and they can't bargain for that anymore because of the change in collective bargaining. And so, yeah, they're being forced out of a better system into a cheaper system. I don't see Scott Walker cutting back on his health insurance.
We need to move on to some other issues. This week, a legislative committee on administrative rules repealed the rule that would have required 4 hours of training to get a concealed weapons permit in the state of Wisconsin. It's something that the Attorney General wanted to have, but apparently legislators did not. Walter John Chilson, was that a mistake to repeal that 4-hour training requirement?
I'm really ambivalent on the whole issue. It was pushed through the legislature by my successor, Senator Pam Galloway, and I think the only reason I felt it was an okay idea was because 48 other states had it. We became the 49th state to have concealed carry. To answer your question specifically, I think I side with the Attorney General. I don't see any problem in requiring 4 hours of education, roughly. I think that was a good idea because many people are who now have concealed carry are totally unfamiliar with how to use a lethal weapon.
Your reaction, Lewis Fortas, to the repeal of that 4-hour requirement?
I mean, nobody's going to accuse J.B. Van Hollen of being any kind of, you know, flaming liberal here or something like that. But, I mean, he is on the opposite side of this legislature. And again, he's a very conservative fellow. Now, I agree again with Walter John on this, that this is a serious thing. You're having people walking in with guns in the coffee shops, restaurants, you know, places of business, the least they can do is take a four-hour course. They don't even have to take an exam at the end. It's just simply you sit there for 4 hours and you try to learn something. I don't think that's asking too much to allow somebody to carry a lethal weapon.
Let's take a call on this from Jim in Wanakee. Hello, Jim, you're on the air.
Thank you for this program. I wanted to talk about the concealed weapon situation. I am a mental health professional with like 40 years, over 40 years of experience in treating both victims and perpetrators of gun crimes. And I've got to tell you that I find this legislation absolutely bizarre and crazy. You know, it was probably appropriate that it came out about Halloween, you know, the first discussion of this for as far as the rules and so forth. But I would ask you to consider what might have happened in the Supreme Court situation when Justice Bradley had Justice Prosser put his hands around her throat. Maybe if she'd had a concealed carry, and he didn't know whether she had a concealed carry, that might have protected her. But I mean, it's just when you think about it, and the road rage, and you know, I'm scared. I mean, that absolutely scares me. Like we have friends and relatives that come and they want to see our beautiful Capitol, and I won't take anybody. I won't go into that Capitol. You know, now that they have. Concealed carry in there.
Thanks very much, Jim. We have limited time here, so let's. The Supreme Court was supposed to meet last week and decide whether or not guns would be allowed in the court. Concealed weapons. They are going to be allowed, presumably, in the Senate and the Assembly. Not in the Senate gallery, but Walter John Chilson. Should we be worried about going to the state capitol because concealed weapons will be allowed?
Well, again, I think we are becoming the 49th state to have concealed carry. Other states, I haven't heard of any problem in other states. This is a law that was pushed forward by those who are gun rights people. There's no question about that. And I think we shouldn't become hysterical about the possible dangers involved. They haven't happened in other states. I don't think there are going to be any problems in Wisconsin. No, I don't think you've got to be afraid to go to the state capitol at all. I think the requirement for further training should be done, but I don't think the law is a totally out of reach, out of hand, a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Lewis Fortas?
I mean, this is a perfect example of that old saying, if it's not broken, don't fix it. There was no problem, Wisconsin. We got along very well without having people walking around with guns. Now we do have people walking around with guns. Is Walter John correct that there won't be a problem? I sure hope he is. But, you know, when you have people, and as the caller called in, you know, there's road rage, there's people. You know, people are angry for some reason these days, real angry. And part of it is the recession. Part of it is the unfairness that they see in society. And now they're going to be walking around with guns? I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous.
All right,
well, even though there's a law, even though there's a law against it, there are a lot of people who do carry weapons, the bad people usually, and I think that's one of the arguments that the pro-gun people have, is that they want to be able to defend themselves against some of the crazies in our society who already carry guns illegally.
I mean, that's why we have police.
Let me get in Dave from Crandon. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think the idea of having concealed carry is a good idea. I got held up in Milwaukee one time, and that would have turned out differently if I had a gun. But I do think it's a good idea to have at least a 4 hours training. And if, in order to hunt, you need to have hunter safety, do hunter safety, why not have at least 4 hours to carry a handgun? That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, well, he agrees with both of our guests. So just FYI, it's estimated that there have been 30,420 applications since between November 1st and when the law took effect, so far in Wisconsin, there have been 3,287 permits that have been issued. Does that sound about right, Walter John Chilson?
I think those are the statistics I've read as well, yeah.
Louis Fortas?
I have no idea.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we will cover more issues from the news this week. Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau. We'll talk about some national issues, too, coming up. We'll get some updates on the GOP presidential nomination. We'll also talk about the Penn State scandal and much more, and issues you want to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the news of the week. It's time for our Week in Review quiz. This week, the Obama administration decided to delay a tax that was designed to strengthen a particular holiday industry. What was that tax? The Obama administration decided to delay a tax. What was it? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. If you think you know, we will select a winner from all of the correct answers by the end of the program. And we will offer you a book that we featured on the program this week. Well, let's talk about the Republican presidential candidate debate this week. Republicans held another debate. It was the 10th, I believe, in Michigan on Wednesday night. All eyes were on Herman Cain after allegations of past sexual harassment. But Rick Perry got most of the focus because he really fumbled when he tried to name three departments that he said he was going to abolish. He couldn't remember the third one. Was that a campaign ender, Walter John Chilson, and should it be that he could not remember what department he wanted to abolish?
Well, I don't think it should be a campaign ender, but it very well could be. I recall Terry Kohler, when he was running against Tony Earle, I believe it was, he said, "I want to talk about three things today," and then he named the first two. He said, "I can't remember the third." And that was on a statewide debate, and it caused him a lot of problems. He named commerce, he named education, and then he couldn't come up with a third, even after some prompting from the other people at the debate, and then he finally later in the debate said, "Oh, yeah, now I remember, it's the energy department." But and he's trying to treat that with humor. On his website, he's asking people to vote on can they remember all of the agencies and rules at the federal level that they'd like to see eliminated. So he's trying to handle it lightly. I think that's probably about the only thing he can do. But he has been... The problem was he was already failing and faltering in debates, and people were beginning to question his ability because of that. I don't think necessarily automatically the best debater should be the President of the United States, but I think there's history that Ronald Reagan, for instance, just clobbered Jimmy Carter in debates. "There you go again," was one of his famous lines. But I think if we were going to have the best debater as president, we'd have Newt Gingrich, no question. And Newt now, probably with so many others faltering, he already is accelerating amazingly in the polls. He might become a viable candidate in that primary before this is all over.
Hmm. Now, Louis Fortas, your thoughts on the Perry gaffe?
Well, first of all, yeah, I agree with the fact that we all have memory lapses, and I think if that was his only problem with the debate, I think he could get by. Although when you have 24-hour news, they need something to make fun of, and he set himself up for that one. But he was accused of not being prepared. He got in the race late. He wasn't planning to get in the race, and then he did get in the race. And so, I mean, he has some other issues. But I think Herman Cain has it much better in the sense that he has three parts to his tax plan, and it's 999. Now, he can't forget that. He can, once he got the first one out, once he remembers the nine, then he just has to repeat it a couple of times, and he's home free. Now, so I think Perry's solution would be to, if I were advising Perry, I'd say, it's a little too complicated having, three things to remember, education, commerce, energy. That's too complicated. So if he could kind of reduce it to one issue and just get up there, especially with that crowd, if he wants a real applause line from with the crowds that have been attending these debates, I mean, if he simply said, which is what he may believe, or at least not what he believes, but a lot of people in the audience believe, when I'm elected president, I'm going to eliminate one institution, and that's the government. And that would get a huge applause line, and it would probably reflect the opinion of a lot of people. And he could be like Sarah Palin. He could just kind of write government on his hand, and then if he forgot, he could just kind of take a look at it, and he'd be home free. I mean, so I think if I were advising him, I would say simplify it, Rick. And I think you do a lot better,
Lewis. You got a good start of an act there. That's pretty good. What are your thoughts, Lewis? On maybe it's not so funny, but Herman Cain was cheered when he talked at the debate about false accusations of sexual harassment. How do you think he's dealing with these allegations that he sexually harassed women when he was the head of the National Restaurant Association?
Well, I don't think he's been inconsistent in how he's been responding, and that doesn't play well with people. But I think what's going on is there are a lot of people in the audience that don't care. I mean, they want to hear what they want to hear, and they don't like Mitt Romney because they think he's too liberal. They don't think he's a true conservative, and so they're trying to find someone else, and they've grabbed on to Herman Cain right now, and they don't want to just let him go over things like sexual harassment, which is a very serious issue to most people, but again, to about 25 or 30% of the population, they're willing to kind of ignore that and stay with their guy. So I think that's what's going on, is that people just don't want to hear about it because it gets in the way of what they want to hear.
Walter John Chilson?
Well, I think some truth to what Lou is saying on that issue. I think Herman Cain is handling it pretty well. He's denying it outright, and there is no, these are only accusations. There's no proof about it, and now his investigation is going on about some of the women who are accusing him. One is in deep financial difficulties, and obviously could be looking for some money on the issue. Another accuser they find out that after she made the accusation against Herman Cain when he was head of the Restaurant Association in Washington, D.C., that she later took another job and she filed a harassment complaint on sexual harassment, just on different issues. So she maybe just listed as a complainer or frankly, a gold digger looking for other recompense. So I think Herman's doing pretty well. The people tend to believe what they hear, and that's the unfortunate thing. We've got four women now who've been accusing him, and people say tend to say there must be some truth to it. I think that's what's hurting Herman Cain right now.
Brief reactions to what has been a huge story in the news this week ever since, it's been all week, but Joe Paterno, the head football coach of Penn State, was fired by the Board of Trustees on Wednesday night. Going into Thursday, there were students who started rioting, upset with this happening. Your general thoughts, Lewis Ford is first, on the scandal at Penn State and the reaction to it.
Well, first of all, it's very sad. I mean, because there are children that were damaged, and that's unconscionable. But what I don't understand is how this graduate student, who I think was 28 at the time or whatever, went into whether it was a locker room or whatever and saw this coach sexually assaulting a child, and he didn't stop it. He goes home and calls his daddy. I mean, where's the moral compass? Where's the character issue? What kind of person is this that does not stop this coach from molesting a child in front, that before his very eyes? That's number one. And I think Joe Paterno, the little I know of him, is he appears to be kind of an old school guy that just this whole idea of talking about any kind of sexual whatever is a little uncomfortable, and so he at least went to the president and I guess the other coaches or whatever, and basically explained what was told to him. And then I think he felt he was off the hook. But I think the thing is so messy and just it's really a terrible crime when you're molesting children. And so I think that there's some serious problems there that have to be dealt with. And if you have to clean house, you have to clean house.
Mm-hmm. Is Penn State handling this right now, Walter John Chilson?
Well, I think they're handling it right now, but mm-hmm. it's just a travesty of the way it's handled up to now. As far as the young man who witnessed the sodomy in a shower room at Penn State, actually at the athletic facilities, I think it just shows the power of football. He saw something like that happen. He knew it was the coach. He was afraid to report it because he had ambitions in the coaching profession himself. It's terrible that he didn't go right to the police or even stop it when he was seeing it. But I think there are many ramifications. Joe Paterno offered to resign at the end of the year, and I think they were right in firing him right now because he knew about this and he didn't go to the police. And as I know the law, if you know that a felony is being committed, and he knew that a felony was being committed, and don't do anything about it, you yourself are guilty of a felony. And I don't know if Joe himself might not be off the hook just because he's lost his job. It's a terrible thing for him to, the same year that he gains the record number of victories for a football coach in the United States, that he also gets fired from his job. But it was absolutely the right thing for the university to do. They should have done something a lot sooner.
Now let's move on to, running really short on time here, international news. A UN watchdog group says Iran has worked on a nuclear bomb design, and also this week some Israeli leaders have talked about a military strike against Iran being possible. Louis Fortas, how worried should we be?
Well, I think under this current leadership in Iran, they're dangerous. So I think there should be some real concern about this, and I think we should do everything we can without bombing them or whatever to prevent this from moving forward. And I think it gets back to dealing with Russia and China, and if they were on board, things would be different. But they seem not to be on board, and that's a kind of a failure of diplomacy. And I think that goes back over several years of. Not having the best relationships with them. And that's why it's so important to have good people in the State Department and good diplomats.
What can the U.S. do, Walter John Chilson?
Well, not much we can do, as Joe has indicated, that we can't do much in the United Nations without the help of Russia or China. There have been blockades suggested. I think that's a good idea. It really is a tinderbox, a terrible situation. We can't let them get a nuclear weapon. And now I've read late last night, that British authorities are saying that Israel does intend to bomb those nuclear building facilities in Iran probably in December. If that happens, then we're going to be in a terrible mess as well, because there's no telling what kind of retaliation, even under the present circumstance, that Iran might be able to take.
On a somewhat related issue, there we saw in the news today that French President Sarkozy said that Netanyahu is a liar, and he was talking with President Obama, and President Obama responded that, well, hey, I've got to deal with Netanyahu every day. Don't you know? I mean, this was picked up by the media. Well, is this a gaffe that's going to cause a lot of diplomatic trouble, Louis Fortas?
Well, I think the problem is the leadership in Israel right now is a real right-wing coalition, and Netanyahu is probably the one of the more moderates in this extreme, you know, right-wing coalition, and he's kind of boxed in. And but boy, they when Joe Biden, for example, was in Israel, they announced the expansion of the settlements, which is the rest of the world is saying they should not be doing, and they announced it just when the vice president was there. I mean, they've been really provocative, unfortunately, to the country that's been their best friend.
Yeah, Walter John Chilson.
Well, I think there probably have been some diplomatic messages sent to Netanyahu saying that Obama really doesn't consider him to be a liar. They want to continue to have good relationships, although the President Obama was accused of slighting him terribly when Netanyahu came to visit the White House. I don't know if whether their relationship is not so good. And I wouldn't call Netanyahu a conservative, or anything but an ultra-conservative, as compared to some of the other leaders they've had in Israel. I think he's a dangerous weapon himself.
We need to reveal the winner and the answer to the Week in Review quiz. Hugh in Milwaukee, congratulations, you win. The question was, what tax did the Obama administration delay this week, a tax that was designed to strengthen a particular holiday industry? The answer is a Christmas tree tax. An association of Christmas tree growers had requested it, a 15-cent tax to be used to market and promote the industry. The group said it would have added to the consumer cost of trees, but again, the Obama administration put the ixnay on that.
I think technically it wasn't a tax, but a fee that was going to be charged, but it certainly could be looked on as a tax and could be blamed. Obama could be blamed.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think I was going to ask both of you very briefly. Governor Walker this week said the tree that's going to be in the Capitol Rotunda is going to be called the Christmas tree, not the holiday tree. Louis Fortas, are you okay with that?
I think he's again playing to a base. I mean, why keep splitting people? Why keep dividing people? Let people call it whatever they want.
Walter John Chilson, very briefly.
Well, I think letting people call it whatever they want. They want to call it a Christmas tree, it should be called a Christmas tree.
There we go. Well, thanks very much to both of you for being with us. Louis Fortas, Walter John Chilson, our guests this week for the Week in Review. We're going to talk more state news, including some proposed cuts to Badger Care, coming up in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. This is the Ideas Network.